Hey, please turn your Bibles to, that has nothing to do with anything. Please turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. Welcome, if you're new, visiting, great to see you, happy you're here. We are in a series called The Emotionally Healthy Church, which is brand new ground for myself, for our leadership team, for the majority of you who are part of Bridgetown, and it's stirring up all sorts of stuff, good, bad, ugly, and I think it's kind of a Sherpa, so to speak, to lead and guide us into a brand new spot as followers of Jesus. Now, we left off last week with this idea of limits. If you were here, you remember the takeaway was, quote, receive the gift of limits. Now, we want to kind of drag this conversation out for another week. And this evening, we want to talk about one specific kind of limitation that we all have, and that is the limitation of time. Time is the one thing that we can't make more of, right? You can't buy it or sell it or steal it or trade it, unless if you're Justin Timberlake in that sweet movie from a couple of years ago, which was awesome, by the way. But other than that, there are 60 minutes in an hour and 24 hours in a day and 7 days in a week, and there will never be any more and there will never be any less. And because of that, we all have this tenuous relationship with time because we just can't get enough of it. So, you know, this week you ask somebody, hey, how are you? How you been? And the odds are people will usually say, good, I'm doing fine, it was great, but I've been what? Busy. I mean, and if you don't believe me, count it up this coming week. Count the number of times you ask somebody, hey, how are you? How have you been? And people say something to the extent of, oh, good, great, fine, but I am way, in particular in the holiday season, I am way too busy. Listen, and you will hear it over and over again. We're busy with work, right? 40 hours a week is a thing of the past, unless if you live in Portland, but it's a thing of the past. Labor-saving devices, end quote, he said with a smirk, like email and the iPhone, have actually made it possible for us to now carry our office around with us in our back pocket or in our purse, right? So the office used to be something that you had to go to. If you wanted to go to work, you had to get up out of bed, you had to walk or ride your bicycle or drive your car to an office somewhere and work. Now all you have to do is wake up, roll over, and unlock your phone. And so if you ever read social theorists from the 1960s, everybody was just assuming that by the new millennium, we would all work part-time and spend the majority of our life in leisure. And here we are in 2014, going on 2015. It's not exactly true. In fact, statistically, we are working more hours than ever before. We are working 37% more than we were half a century ago. So all that to say, we're busy with work, but we're also busy with play. I used to have a subscription to Portland Monthly. Maybe you have one, maybe not. It's a great magazine, and I love it. But I stopped after a while because every month I would get done reading my issue, and I just had this feeling like I need to go out and I need to eat at these 25 new restaurants and these four new bars and this eight new coffee shops and this thing and that. I need to go wine tasting out here. I need to go to the coast here. I need to go on this hike I've never even heard of before, but I have to go. I have to go to the show. I have to go to this gallery. I have to go to this tasting. I have to go. Portland is essentially a black hole of hedonism. It's like this dream that you just never have to wake up from. And so we fill our life up to capacity and then to overcapacity with job and career and email and overtime and sport and television, entertainment and music and family and friends and church and missional community and justice and thing after thing after thing, and we speed up to this frenetic pace, and in doing so, we lose our grip on joy and peace, and we slip into a state of busyness, and we're not emotionally healthy. Because it's a busyness that goes past our schedule and into our personhood, into our state of being. So, tonight I want to start a rebellion against the tidal wave of busyness in our culture. I want to talk about a way to draw a line in the sand and say, all right, enough is enough, no more. Tonight, I would like to talk about the Sabbath. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the water. Skip down to the end of the chapter, 31. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, or there was time, the sixth day. So in this story, and the odds are you know it well, for 6 days, God is hard at work. He creates the heavens, the earth, sun, moon, stars, mountain, ocean, desert, wilderness, plant, animal life, birds, fish. As his magnum opus, he creates human to rule over his brand new world. All in 6 days. You think your week was productive. Then, watch what happens next. Chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed and all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, so on the seventh day he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God rested. Let that sink in. God himself rested. After 6 days of universe-making work, God said, you know, is enough, it's time to rest. Now, this doesn't mean that God was tired, per se. The word rested is sabbat in Hebrew. It's where we get the word Sabbath, and it means to rest or to cease or to be done. The idea here isn't that God was worn out. It's the imagery of kind of after a long, hard day's work, you pull up a chair, sit down, crack open a beer, look out on the work that you've done, and you think to yourself, not bad. It's that deep sense of satisfaction and fulfillment you get when you love what you do and you know that you're good at it. In fact, it can be translated, this word sabbat, as to celebrate. The idea here is an entire day in the week that is set aside to celebrate, to just enjoy and to delight in the world that God made, in the ocean and the mountain and the sunshine and the beauty in a cold, windy day like today. In your life in the world. The life that God has carved out for you, that you've made for yourself, the gift of joy that you get to experience and breathe in and breathe out every day. And then, of course, more than anything, to delight in God himself. So in the story, God worked for 6 days, and then he rested for one. And in doing so, he built a rhythm into the fabric of creation itself. For 6 days, we, as human beings made in God's image, we work just like God worked. And then on the seventh day, we rest just like God rested. Now notice two things in the story before we move on. If you're taking notes, first off, notice God blessed, write that word down, blessed the seventh day. In Genesis 1 and 2, God blesses three things, animals, human beings, and the Sabbath. And with animals and human beings, the blessing is a life-giving ability to procreate. So if you know the story, God blessed the animals and he said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. And then a paragraph or two later, we read that God blessed Adam and Eve, or human, and said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. And then we read, third, that God blessed, the exact same word, God blessed the Sabbath. What does that mean? That means the Sabbath has a life-giving ability to fill the earth up with more life. Life is tiring, am I right? Even when it's good, even if you're in your dream job, you're out of school, and you hit the jackpot, and you love what you do, and it is so fun. Even if that's you, some of you are thinking, yeah, right. Even if that's you, though, by the end of 6 days into it, you're worn down, you're done, you're out of breath, you're tired, because work, no matter how much you love it, depletes your energy. But rest, on the other hand, rest refills you with creativity and emotional health and maturity and a sense of, all right, I can do this again, and vision for the future and fortitude. Rest refills you with life. Rest is life-giving. Why? Because God blessed the Sabbath. And then secondly, if you're taking notes, notice that God blessed the seventh day, and then we read, he made it holy, end quote. Now, the rabbis talk about what's called the principle of first mention, which is a hermeneutical principle. It's a way of reading the Bible. And the basic idea is that the first time you ever read a word in the Bible, it sets the stage for how that word is to be read from there on. It's kind of like a definition. Now, did you know that the first time you ever read the word holy in all of the Bible is right here? God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy. This is fascinating. What does God make holy? Yeah, time, essentially. Rest, but time. A day in a week. Now, this is staggering because in the ancient Near East, the gods were found in space, not in time. So the gods were found in a temple or on a mountain or a cave or a shrine or a spring. And so if you live in the ancient Near East and you're reading Genesis for the first time, you would think after 6 days of Yahweh, the creator God, hard at work in the universe, then as the climax of it all, God would make a holy temple, or he would make a holy mountain, or he'd make a holy pool, or what have you. But instead, no, God makes a holy day. Abraham Joshua Heschel is a brilliant Jewish writer. We have his short, easy-to-read book on the Sabbath. Honestly, it changed my life a few years ago. It's for sale out of the book table. He writes this: the Sabbaths are our great cathedrals. And then later he writes about the Sabbath as architecture in time. I love that. So there is a day that is blessed, life-giving ability to fill the earth, and is holy. The Sabbath is a day when God has my rapt attention, when we tune into the frequency of God's presence and we match the cadence of our heartbeat to his, and when all the other noise fades away. The Sabbath is a day when we are fully available to our family and our friends. The Sabbath is a day for me when my phone is off, my email is closed, and I don't care who you are, you can't get a hold of me. The Sabbath is a day to remember that the world goes on without us, that we are not as important as we think, that we live in a story and we are not the main character. And the Sabbath stands as an invitation from Yahweh, the creator God, to the creation, you and me, to men and women created in God's image. We work because God worked, and we rest because God rested. But when we don't take God's invitation, when we work and we play and we shop and we do all this stuff, but we don't actually rest, when we fight the rhythm that was embedded in the human body, and by the way, study after study after study has been done on this, you need a seventh day rest, like it's a physiological, it's a biochemical reality for the human body. When you fight this rhythm that was embedded in your body, that was embedded in creation itself, you reap the consequences. You become emotionally unhealthy. Fatigue, exhaustion, burnout, stress, anxiety, a worn down immune system, a lethargic, tired body, a slower mind, a soul that feels empty, maybe even a disconnect from God himself. These are the results of a life without Sabbath rest. Which is why, as the story goes on, and there's so much I could turn to, but as the story goes on, we actually see God command the Sabbath. Turn over to Exodus, one book to the right, to Exodus chapter 16. Fast forward in the scripture narrative to the Exodus. If you know the story, if not, there's a movie coming out next year. Christian Bale just is a stud. Israel, Batman, and Moses. All right, cool. Israel in the story is out in the desert, hundreds of thousands of people with no food and no water. People are hungry, people are thirsty, and people in the story are anything but emotionally healthy. So they grumble against God and bicker and whine and complain for dying out in the desert. And then we read this in chapter 16, verse 9. Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, hey, come before Yahweh, for he has heard your grumbling." When Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of Yahweh appearing in the cloud. Yahweh said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am Yahweh your God." That evening, quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. Listen to this. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, a Hebrew word meaning, that's manna. They said to each other manna in Hebrew, which is a Hebrew word meaning, what is it? So it's not exactly like the most original name. Hey, let's call it, what the heck is that? For they did not know what it was. Now skip down to 21. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed. And when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, now listen here, they gathered twice as much, two omers, which is a unit of measurement, for each person. And the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, this is what Yahweh commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest. And then listen, a holy Sabbath to Yahweh. Notice the language, a holy Sabbath to Yahweh. This word holy can be translated dedicated to. That's the idea. If something is holy, it means it's dedicated to something or someone. So the Sabbath is an entire day that is holy, that is dedicated to Yahweh or God himself. Meaning it's not only a day for rest, sure, anybody can do that, follower of God or not, but it's also a day for worship. When I Sabbath, I run everything through that grid. Is this rest and is this worship? If the answer to both questions is yes, then I do it with joy. If the answer is no, or maybe, or kind of, but I'm not really sure, then I hold off. There are six other days of the week for that thing. Because, and here's where I need you to track with me, the Sabbath is not the same thing as a day off. Make sure that you get the difference. On a day off, you don't work for your employer, in theory, unless if you have an iPhone. But you run errands, you pay bills, you go to the bank, you get caught up around your apartment or whatever. If you have a lawn, first off, I'm sorry. Secondly, you mow it, right? If you had, right, this time of year, you're out in the cold, like slugging it out with a rake and the tree and all of this stuff. You do all the work that you don't get paid for, and you play, like we love to play. We go play football or whatever it is. I don't, obviously, but you, in theory, hypothetically. And we also buy and sell with all the money that we made during the week. We're Americans, so how do we relax? We go shopping. Right, so we go to Beam and Anchor, or we stop by REI to pick up something, or you make an IKEA run, and there goes 6 hours of your life. But on the Sabbath, right, that's a day off. And a day off is a fantastic American tradition. But on the Sabbath, you rest and you worship. It's very different. This is a brand new idea for some of you, and that's okay. This is why Moses goes on to teach the Israelites how to get ready for the Sabbath. Keep reading, second half of 23. He goes on to say, so bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning. Right? So on the sixth day, right before the Sabbath, hey, you bake, you boil, whatever your style is, right? You eat meat, okay, whatever. You're vegan, you're vegetarian, whatever your style is, you bake it, you boil it, okay. The idea here is, hey, you gear up and you get ready for the Sabbath. You stop by Whole Foods or New Seasons on Division, or you're thinking, I don't have money for that. Trader Joe's, whatever your style is. You make a stop, you gear up. The writer John in the New Testament calls the day before the Sabbath the, quote, preparation day. That was the entire day was called the preparation day. In my family, we Sabbath, I'll chat about it in a few minutes, but we Sabbath Friday night to Saturday afternoon. And so Friday late afternoon is a flurry of activity, right? And we do stop by Trader Joe's, not Whole Foods. And we pick up stuff and answer text messages and fire off a few emails and get stuff done so that when the sun goes down Friday night, if it's not rest, if it's not worship, it's done for 24 hours. There's no more. The best way to describe the Sabbath for me is kind of like gearing up for a weekly holiday. It's almost like having Thanksgiving or Christmas every week, just with less stress and no in-laws. So that's kind of the idea behind it, because you want the day to stand apart. Now keep reading. The story goes on. 27. Nevertheless, so 24, they saved it until morning as Moses commanded. Did not stink or get maggots in it, which is okay, great. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to Yahweh. You will not, there's that language again, Sabbath to Yahweh. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it. On the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. And then this, 27. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, kind of the type A, like driven people, and they found none. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that Yahweh has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the Sabbath day." Notice this language. It's really intriguing to me. This two sentences back to back. First we read, "How long will you refuse to keep my commands?" Then we read, "Bear in mind that Yahweh has given you the Sabbath." So the Sabbath is a command, but it's also a gift. Now, I know what you're thinking right now, if you know the scriptures at all well, you're thinking that a lot of people, and for good reason, point out that there is no command to Sabbath anywhere in the New Testament. So there's all this talk about Sabbath all through what we now call the Old Testament, Genesis to Malachi, and then you get to the Gospels, and there's a little bit in there, and then after that, it's kind of silent. Like, you read no command to Sabbath anywhere in the New Testament. That is true. Other people will say, you know, the Sabbath was part of the law or part of the Torah. That's not really actually accurate. It was in Genesis and the first part of Exodus, millennia before Moses and Mount Sinai and the Ten Commandments and what we think of as the law, the book of Leviticus and Numbers and all of that. In fact, this story right here is before the Ten Commandments. And then when you get to the Ten Commandments, yes, it's right there front and center. It's one of the Ten Commandments. In fact, it is the longest of all ten. I think that says something. It gets more real estate than any of the other Ten Commandments. But you're right, there is no command for us in the day and age that we live as followers of Jesus. There's no command. You don't have to take a Sabbath. But it still stands as a gift from God. There is no command in the New Testament to sleep 8 hours a night. You don't have to. You want to sleep 10? Welcome to Portland. You want to sleep 6? Great. But if you want to live an emotionally healthy life, depending on the makeup of your body, everybody's a little bit different, but the vast majority of you statistically, if you want to live an emotionally healthy life, you need to sleep at least 8 hours a night. You don't have to. God's not angry at you if you sleep for 4 hours, but I feel bad for your spouse or your roommate. Right? There's no command in the New Testament that says, you know, thou shalt not drink 20 cups of coffee a day. Like, go ahead. It's not sin. It's stupid, but it's not sin. Right? But if you want to live an emotionally healthy life, you should probably cap it at around 2 or 3, all right? Or whatever, maybe I'm legalistic, blah, 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 5, whatever your number is, all right? But like the odds are at some point in the name of emotional health, like when you can't get it up to your lip without spilling it on your, okay, at that point you stop, all right? So my point is, even if it's not a command for us today, sure, great, but it still stands as a gift from the Creator God to you and me, the creation. Tragically, over the millennia, this gift has been lost. In part because, and let's be honest here, the Sabbath is un-American. Honestly, it's just not the way we roll. Like, it's just not how we are. We know how to work, for the most part. We know how to play. But we don't really know how to rest or how to worship, at least not very well. So it's partially because of kind of the cultural milieu that is the United States of America and our go, 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 shop, 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 buy, 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 work, 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 get it done kind of attitude. But also, I think, because of a misreading of Jesus. Turn over to the New Testament to the Gospel of Mark chapter 2. Remember Mark from a few months ago? We were in a series all the way through Mark for a year and a half. Turn one more time to the Gospel of Mark chapter 2. If you know anything about Matthew or Mark or Luke or John, the Sabbath for Jesus was essentially a day to get in trouble. Here is one example, Mark chapter 2, verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some ears of corn. The Pharisees said to them, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Now, there's no law against snacking in the Torah, okay? All the Torah says is on the Sabbath, don't work. But would you agree that don't work, even that word work is a little bit ambiguous, right? For example, I had a great run this morning, Forest Park, 9 miles. It was gorgeous. I was freezing, but it was so nice. Is running work or rest? Exactly my point. Is it work? Is it depends on who you are. I think of it as work, right? But for other people, I know it's life-giving and healing and it's renewal. But for some of you, it's you might as well like stop by Guantanamo Bay for an hour and a half, right? So much of it depends on you, your personality, your makeup, how you're wired. Now, this kind of freedom and space and creativity and ambiguity around this idea of work, this is no good for Pharisees. So the Pharisees added hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of rules about the Sabbath around the one or two command in the Torah, hey, don't work on the Sabbath. And so they would clarify, this is how far you can walk and no farther. This is how much weight you can carry. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. And along the way, I think they started out with a good heart. But along the way, they lost the plot line, which is why Jesus goes on to say, skip down to 27, then he said to them, listen, the Sabbath was made for man or for humanity, not humanity for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man, that's a Jesus kind of moniker for himself, is Lord even of the Sabbath. Now, in the first century, Jews, like the Pharisees, needed to hear the second part of that sentence. Hey, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Like, you have it all upside down. But I would argue that here now in the 21st century, for non-Pharisees like you and me, I think that we, for the most part, need to hear the first part of that sentence. Listen, the Sabbath was made, it was created, it was thought up for humanity, for human beings to flourish in God's presence. We have the exact opposite problem. It's not that we have hundreds of rules about the Sabbath, it's that we don't have any at all. Most of us, if we're honest, if I were to take a poll, my guess is that most of us don't even take a Sabbath. Day off, sure. We're American, of course. This is Portland. We take five. But a Sabbath? A day set aside for nothing but rest and worship. Most of us don't even do that. We need to relearn this ancient art form of Sabbath. Why? Because watch what happens next. Chapter 3, verse 1. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue. So here's another story on another Sabbath. And a man with a shriveled hand was there, kind of a deformity. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" This is kind of like, would you rather with Jesus? But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. He said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. You know, like you do after Jesus does a healing. You just plot to kill the guy. So, you may or may not know this, but if you, even from a cursory reading of the Gospels, in particular Mark, you know that the majority of Jesus' healings take place on what day? Sabbath. I wonder why that is. I, for one, don't think it's random or haphazard. I think it's on purpose. I think it's because for Jesus, the Sabbath is a day for healing. It's a day when Jesus does some of his best work. I think it was that way in the first century, and in my opinion, 2 millennia later, nothing has changed. What are you saying? All I'm saying, and tonight is like super straightforward, all I'm saying is take a Sabbath. This coming week, yeah, but it's Christmas. I have to go shopping. Exactly. This coming week, take a Sabbath. Not a day off. Take a Sabbath. When? Whenever works. People get all hung up and OCD and freak out over which day of the week. Listen, Genesis just says the seventh day. Which day is the seventh day? Exactly. Like whatever day works for you. For the vast majority of you, I would suggest Sunday. It's a fantastic day. Sleep in. Go out to brunch with your friends. Take a nap in the afternoon. Go for a run. Read whatever is life-giving for you. And then end your night here around the table, the bread and the cup, in worship of the God who made you. Fantastic. I don't Sabbath on Sunday because for me it's a work day and I love it. I love church. I look forward to it all week long, but by Sunday night I am super tired. I'm just really worn down. So I Sabbath Friday night to Saturday afternoon. So if you have a weird schedule like me, if you're a doctor, you're in medical school, you're a student at all, you work two jobs, or your schedule is irregular, or whatever it is, then just get creative and flexible and figure out how to make it work for you. And if you've never done this before, listen, don't expect it to be easy. It's harder than you would think. Sabbath is an art form. Think of it kind of like learning how to play the piano or paint or play soccer or whatever it is. It takes time. Nobody is good at it right away. So if you've never done this before, and this coming Saturday or next Sunday or whatever it is, or tomorrow, you say, you know what, I'm going to clear my schedule, set aside a day, rest, worship, the odds are it will be really weird the first time. You might even feel bored or angsty or kind of at a weird pace and not able to calm down or whatever it is. That's okay. It takes time. In fact, sometimes it takes years. My wife and I have been doing Sabbath now, I think, for 5 years. And honestly, just this last year, I finally feel like we kind of dialed it in. Not that we have it down, but man, it is a good day pretty much every single week. And 5 years is not a short amount of time, right? It takes a while, in particular if you are not single, if you do this with a spouse or with a family, because there's no one right way to Sabbath. I could walk you through my day hour by hour or whatever, but it's how I'm wired, right? It's how a dad with three kids who's introverted or whatever. There's so much of it depends on your personality, your makeup, what you love, what you hate, how God wired you. So for me as an introvert, I need hours and hours of time alone in my Sabbath. I want to read and journal and think and pray and read some more and go on a walk and read some more. My wife, on the other hand, that is not at all her idea of rest or worship. So she wants some time in the scriptures and in prayer, maybe a little bit of time to read if it's an incredibly good book, like one written by her husband. But I'm kidding, by the way. I'm kidding. Come on. But she wants to go on a bike ride and get coffee with her best friend and walk through the city and, you know, whatever it is. And so it took us years to kind of figure out how we do this together. But once you start to dial it in, I mean, whatever it is for you and however you're wired, oh my gosh, it is over the top life-giving. So for you nuts and bolts people, I mean, for us, it's pretty straightforward. We start Friday evening. We do kind of the ancient Jewish rhythm where the day starts at sundown. So we start the Sabbath 20 minutes before sundown every Friday night. Right before the Sabbath starts, I go into my office, clear off my desk, and I power down my phone, and I power down my iPad, and I power down my computer, and I literally pick it up, and I put it in a box, and I close the top, and I stick it in my closet, and it's gone for 24 hours. I know we're all wired different, and this isn't like a Bible wrong or right thing, but the way I'm wired, oh my gosh, a 24-hour weekly break from all digital technology is incredibly healthy for me, in particular emotionally. So then we circle up as a family in the living room, and we go through kind of some of the Jewish stuff. We light the candles of Sabbath, Tammy and the kids, and one symbolizes remember, and the other symbolizes observe, and we do the Kiddush, which is the prayer over the wine. We pour wine, and don't worry, it's grape juice for the kids, because I know some of you are thinking, this is Portland, and he is him, so you never know. Grape juice for the kids, and we read a psalm out loud together, and then we just pray for the Holy Spirit to come and lead and guide us into a place of intimacy with God, His presence, and His peace. And it is bizarre. I swear, within 10, 15 minutes every Friday night, it's like the spirit of quiet and rest comes over the home. And when you have three kids, the ages that my kids are, that's miraculous, all right? And we just hang out, we relax, it's early in the day this time of year. We have dinner, which we pre-made that morning, and so there's no cooking. We sit around the table, and we just eat our way through the Sabbath. So we have seconds, and we have thirds, and more wine, or grape juice, and dessert, and more dessert. And we just eat our way through, and we sit around the table as a family, and laugh. Sometimes we have friends, close friends, or family over. We laugh. We do highlight of the week with the kids. We talk about Star Wars and just all the really amazing stuff in God's creation. Star Wars. And then after dinner, the dishes go in the sink because we don't work, right? So it's there in the sink until Saturday night. And then we usually go to bed early. put the kids down early. There's no TV. There's no digital technology. We read for a bit. I'm married, so we do married stuff. And then, you know, tea, whatever. And then, and we go to bed early. Seriously, we go to bed. What are you laughing at? Come on. Be fruitful, multiply. It is a blessing and a command, all right? So we go to bed early. We sleep in Saturday morning, get up whenever we want, make coffee. All five of us start the day in the scriptures. Even my two kindergartners who can't read yet, but we give them a cup of vegan hot cocoa and a picture book, and they're in, right? And so all five of us, we just start the day. We find a corner of the house, and we curl up, and we read the scriptures, and we pray, and we relax. We don't exercise. We usually make brunch, or if we can afford it, we go out to brunch as a family and just eat more and more and more. We come home in the afternoon. The kids take a nap. Our 9-year-old just finished Lord of the Rings. He reads some book in the front room, and I go get my introvert on and read some more. My wife takes a nap, goes out with her friend, and then we just are together as a family. It is so life-giving, and it goes until about 6 or so on Saturday night. And this strange, mysterious thing happens to me every single week. There's this moment, sometimes depending on how rough the week was, sometimes it's an hour or two in, sometimes it's, you know, the next morning or whatever, but there's this moment when all of a sudden I just think to myself, oh, I feel human again. I can do this. I think about another week, it's not, oh my gosh, it's like, no, yeah. And by the end of the week, by the end of the day, you're thinking, bring it on, let's go. Like, there's this sense I get my soul back. Now, I have no idea what it would look like for you. Maybe it's hiking in the gorge, or maybe it's a bike ride out to Savis Island, or maybe it's, you know, you bake or whatever. It's time with friends, or I have no idea how you're wired. What for you is rest? What for you is worship. My point is that there is a day that is blessed and that is holy. Before we started doing Sabbath, my day off, I used to work 6 days a week, my day off was hands down the worst day of my week. I was grouchy, on edge, mad at the world, because for the most part, I was addicted to accomplishment and accumulation, right? Work and shopping, right? The drug of more. That's how I was wired. And so all of a sudden I would get to my day off and it's like I was like withdrawal. Like, where's my drug for the day? And then when we started Sabbath, it was honestly like a reshaping of our life from top to bottom. Now Sabbath is without a doubt the best day of every single week. We all look forward to it. My kids look forward to it all week long. My two youngest don't really have a sense of like time yet, you know? So every night when they go to sleep, Daddy, is tomorrow Sabbath? No, it was yesterday, Moses. Oh, okay. Next day, is tomorrow Sabbath? No, it's 5 days from now. Like, they look forward, but the beauty is they look forward to it all week long because they know there's going to be pancakes and time with Dad and Legos and a walk to the park and whatever it is. They look forward to it, and above all, to God's presence. And so for me, this whole idea of Sabbath, first off, has been front and center in my journey towards emotional health. It has been a way to stay emotionally healthy. But more than that, it has been a way for me to cultivate a life in God's presence. You know, most of us, I feel like God's presence is a place that we visit, that maybe we slip in and out of. And so there's a moment when you're at church, or maybe for you it's on a run in Forest Park, or it's in a movie, or whatever it is. Like, there's this sense of, oh, I feel like God's presence is here, and I feel in tune with God. And then you go back to traffic, or chemistry class, or your job that you hate, or date night, or whatever it is. But most of us, I'm guessing, if not all of us, like, what you really are craving deep in your bones is you want to learn to live in God's presence 24/7. That's life. I mean, that is life. At the center of everything that we call God and Jesus and Spirit and kingdom and church and Bible and justice and community, at the center of all of it is a God who made the world as a place to be with his people and a people that were made to be with God himself. That's it. And so Sabbath for us has been way more than a way to kind of recharge and catch our breath. It has been a way to practice the presence of God, as one writer one ancient writer said. And yes, it has been front and center in my journey towards emotional healing and health. And as you know, I have a long ways to go, but at least I'm on track now. And a number of stuff has been really helpful. All the stuff in this series last week, the whole idea about receive the gift of limits, that was life-changing for me. Therapy has been, community has been. Some of the stuff we're about to talk about next week and the week after has been. But really above all, when it comes to practice, this ancient practice of the Sabbath, for me, has reshaped the way that myself and my family live from the ground up. And it's something that I want so badly for all of you. Because it's not just about rest, it's about the presence of God. Walter Brueggemann, who's this fantastic Old Testament scholar, he has a short, tiny book on the Sabbath, but it's really good. And he writes this: people who keep Sabbath live all 7 days differently. Meaning Sabbath, yeah, it's a 24-hour time period at the end of your week. Exactly, sure. But it's also a way of life, right? It's a way to live in God's presence all week long. That's why the Sabbath is on day 7, not day 3 or day 4. It's not a break in the middle of your week so you can catch your breath and then get back to work. No, it's day 7. It's the climax. It's what the entire week is building up to. And when you Sabbath well, you stay in that spirit of rest all week long, even as you work, even as you labor and toil and wrestle with the earth to do what God has called you to do, and you serve and you fight and you bleed for the kingdom of God. You do all of that from a heart posture, from a place of rest, because you are now living a God-saturated life. This is something that I want for myself and for my family and for my children to grow up in, and this is something that I want for you as my church family and my friends. Maybe you've never done this before and it's all new, then I cannot encourage you enough to not just give it a shot, but to actually make a decision to make this a part of your life. Maybe you have done this before. Maybe you're here a few years ago when I did a little bit of teaching on Sabbath and the Work series, and maybe you gave it a shot, and it was kind of cool, and it was good for a while, but then it was frustrating, and now, like, you just don't really do it anymore. Or maybe you know all about Sabbath. Like, you have it down, but in all honesty, you would just rather go shopping and see the Hunger Games, which is good, I hear. Maybe tonight. I was thinking about it tonight after church. I don't know. That's fine. If that's you, great, fine. All I want you to know, and here's where we land, is that there is a day that is blessed and that is holy. There is a rhythm in your body and in your soul. There is a rhythm, I would argue, in the cosmos itself, the interplay of work and rest. And maybe you have to slow your life down to tune into that rhythm. Maybe you have to even change your lifestyle. Maybe you have to even shop less, even in Christmas, whatever it is. But if and when you do, God is waiting for you there. Not on a mountain or in a temple or in a church building, but in a moment. God is a God of moments. And he is waiting for you there, and he is waiting for you every single second of every minute of every hour of every day that you are alive and breathing. And he's waiting there for you with life. Let's pray.